Good morning. Good morning.
It's a little foggy. It's a little cold. It's a little wet. It's a little like winter in Oregon, at least Western Oregon. Hey, good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is Talk Radio with me, Joe Uris. Abe Proctor, my buddy, partner, pal, is not here today. It's all me alone, and I hope you'll have lots of calls. 231-8187. Did you have a good New Year's Eve? I never go out. I huddle against the cold and misery of it all, the terror of the drunk drivers and stuff like that. I miss all the good music. I don't know what's happening. It's dark. It's evil. It's just the way it is at the beginning of the year for me. But I did get a noisemaker. So, Happy New Year. Look out! He's got a kazoo! Sorry. I wanted to talk about a bunch of stuff, and I wanted to stay with my favorite theme. I'm sad to say my favorite theme. Here's the deal, and I think this is important to understand. First of all, I want to make a New Year's resolution. I personally want to hear more from people who disagree with me, and I want to hear more particularly from conservatives. Now let's talk about what I mean by conservative for a minute. I don't mind people who are knee-jerk supporters of the present administration. They're an amusing lot, and their faith is kind of inspiring in a way. And I do want to hear from them. But I'm particularly interested in hearing from libertarians and true conservatives. What do I mean by true conservative? Well, that's a person who wants to conserve the traditions of the constitutional government of the United States, who believes, for example, in the checks and balances of the system, the idea that the Supreme Court has a function in checking excesses of law, and that the Congress has an important function in writing law and checking the excesses of the potentially imperial presidency, and in fact that the presidency has a certain role in putting forward its own agenda, but that agenda is clearly limited under the Constitution. So if you are a conservative in that context, I do want to hear from you. Hey, even if you're not, even if you're, you know, a Bushy lover, I do want to hear from you. And it's important that we have a dialogue at this time about these issues. And in a minute, I'll explain why it's so important. KBOO is by tradition and by intent a progressive radio station. And I, by tradition and intent, I'm a progressive kind of radio guy. But there's lots of stuff that needs to happen, lots of conversation that needs to happen, because we are in, I believe, an unprecedentedly dangerous situation in this country today. Too much drama? I don't think so. Here's the deal. These people now in power are not your mother's Republican Party. They are not the party of Lincoln. They are not the party of Theodore Roosevelt. They are not the party, well, maybe a little bit in terms of corruption, of Warren G. Harding. They are not the party of Barry Goldwater. They are not the party of Dwight Eisenhower. They are not even the party of Ronald Reagan, although he started the slide into the situation we're in today. They are fascists. They may not even know or understand that they are fascists, but they are. And this is very disturbing because this so-called Republican Party has nearly gained total control of every aspect of the federal government. They have dominance of the House of Representatives. Now, let's be clear here. The House may change in this year. This is a crucial year, 2006. And that means that these people are even more dangerous. The reason why they may lose control is not because of the brave programs put forward by the Democratic Party. Unfortunately, it's far from the case. They may lose, that is, these so-called Republicans, may lose control of the House of Representatives because so many crooks spoiled their broth. There are, I understand, at least 40, possibly 48 members of Congress who must be very scared right now as the scandals spread, as the bribery, the illegal activity, the kickbacks, the paybacks, and so on become more and more clear as Abramoff and his buddies begin to spill the beans. So we have to understand that they control the House, but they may not. And, hey, despite all their efforts, the Senate is still up for grabs. They will control the Supreme Court. They will control the Supreme Court. The nominations, a successful nomination of Roberts, the Alito, the very possibly successful, I hope not. Maybe you all can help stop it by calling often and complaining long to your congresspeople. The successful Alito, possibly successful Alito nomination. Supreme Court could be lost to us forever, and that means women's rights, civil liberties, endless issues that have been fought over and major gains have been made vis-a-vis the Constitution will be lost. The executive branch, do I need to go into it? Do I need to go into the fact that Bush is a person who could be impeached, but who will not probably be impeached? Look at the situation. Bill Clinton played around with an aide, not even an aide, doesn't matter, and was foolish enough to lie about it, and consequently, ever dogged, by the way, by these opportunists, was essentially impeached. And the stigma of impeachment, unfortunately, was removed in that process. Clinton survived because he was so popular, but his policies essentially were the policies that set up a lot of what's going on today. His weakness set up the situation that allowed George W. Bush to become president. These guys, Cheney, Bush et al., seek total control. Total control. They will do anything. They will say anything. They will stop at nothing to keep control and to extend control, whether it's faking a war, exploiting terrorists, destroying civil liberties, when attacked by the press for their incredible crimes. They will return the attack on the New York Times, on the Los Angeles Times, on the Washington Post. They're actually engaged in a fight against the principled newspapers, well, hardly principled, barely principled newspapers in the United States. And you, all of you, must remember that this is an election year. These guys know if they lose control of Congress, impeachment, indictment, and so on may very well follow. They are not unaware of the Richard Nixon model. So this is a desperate time for them, and consequently a desperate time for America and America's potential for democracy. Now, let me be clear. The agenda of fighting these fascists, while a progressive agenda, is in no way going to create a progressive society. It will simply stop the horrible slide into true totalitarian fascism in America. These are crucial and difficult times. These are times cursed by the necessity for every American to come to the aid of their nation. Now, having said all that, perhaps sometime later in the show I can go through the list of things that are fascistic about this administration. Maybe we need to do that. I don't think so. But I do need to hear from you. After all, this is talk radio, your suggestions, your ideas, your reactions, and once again, I want to emphasize this, your disagreement with me, your principled arguments, particularly if you're a conservative or a libertarian, are more than welcome today. I want to hear from you and the rest of you. So, 231-8187, who do we got? James, how you doing?
Good morning, Joe.
How are you?
I'm very good. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you.
I am your true Jeffersonian Republican / Libertarian.
Okay.
I think that the marching orders that you've been getting from the New York Times, which has been taken over by fascists, has warped your mind.
Wait a minute. Let me go back through that. My marching orders that I've gotten from the New York Times.
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't aware of orders, but okay, yeah, all right. In other words, the news I'm getting out of the Times has warped my mind.
Yes, it's all lies.
It's all lies?
Yeah.
So, like, the weather report, too?
I don't read the weather report, so I don't know about that.
Okay. So you're saying that the Times essentially tells me lies?
Yes.
Okay, what do you... So, I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. If it's all lies...
All right, well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty here.
Yeah, please,
the basic,
please.
The basic deal is we are in a battle against fascism.
Okay.
Fascism on the right and fascism on the left.
Okay.
And they have taken over... Well, oh, man...
now, just, James, don't panic. Just order your thinking and lay it out.
There's just so much. I mean, okay, there are fascists on the right,
okay,
and there are fascists on the left. You cannot deny it.
Well, wait a minute. Before I do or don't deny it, I need you to explain to me who the fascists on the left are, who the fascists on the right are, what their program or agenda is, because it's very abstract at this point, James.
Okay, fascists on the left are Barbara Boxer, Maxine Waters, those which you would consider progressives. What's that idiot from Ohio? Last name starts with a K. He was a presidential candidate.
Kucinich?
Yeah, that clown.
Okay, now how are they fascists?
They advocate taking power from the people and giving it to the state.
Taking power from the people and giving it to the state.
Yes.
Shall we continue on from that, or do you want to explain what you mean by that? Can you give me some specifics?
If you like. I could continue on, and I can explain what I mean by that.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is the more you ask from the state, the less power you have.
Ah.
In other words, you are selling yourself into slavery.
Ah.
That's why the Founding Fathers, the entire Bill of Rights and all that was to protect the minority from the majority.
Okay. I mean, let's
are all schemes denied or designed to give power to the state so they can usurp those laws.
Well, can you give me an example, for example, of how Barbara... Boxer is doing this thing, this bad thing? Just one example.
Advocating national health care.
Ah, so national health care, which all the other Western democracies have, is fascistic.
Yes.
Okay. All right, I just want to get where you're coming from. I wanted to be clear.
Yes, because Max is, TriMet is a fascist entity.
TriMet is a fascist.
You have government and business in a cooperative thing, that's fascism.
So any kind of cooperation between the commercial element and the public sector is by its very nature, according to you, fascistic?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to get it clear. Go ahead.
If there are people on the right, I think what progressives refer to as neoconservatives tend to be Jewish. I think that...
Wait, we got a Zionist conspiracy coming up here?
I think it is a continuation. I think this is an anti-Jew movement on the left. It is the Arabs are anti-Jew. And
the Arabs are anti-Jewish? I thought they were anti...
Think,
wait a minute, hold on, hang on. Because I'm a little confused.
Jew.
Pardon me?
I think Europe is anti-Jew.
Europe is anti-Jewish, and do you mean the people of Europe or the governments of Europe?
I mean the people of Europe.
Are anti-Semitic.
And the governments.
Huh.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, not okay, I agree with you, but okay, I gotcha.
Yes, it is. It's real. I mean, what do you think Saddam Hussein, I saw something on the History Channel not too long ago, his mentors were all Nazis.
Yes. Let me just for our audience remind people that the government of Saddam Hussein was modeled after two totalitarian regimes: Stalin's regime in the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, and the Nazi regime in Germany. And you're right in that respect. And indeed, anti-Semitism is part of the program that has been pushed ever since the creation, well, even before that, but ever since the attempt at the creation of the State of Israel, and as you suggest, even before that. So
yeah.
One part of your idea about Saddam I agree with.
And, well, I think the entire movement on the left, I think a lot of it...
But how is Saddam on the left? See, I don't see Saddam on the left.
No, I'm saying the left in this country, and as a whole, the left... The way I, as a conservative, sees it, it's conservative Republicans against the entire Western world.
Wow.
Because, yeah, that's the way we see it. Because we got 50% of the people in this country who are, they're probably, there's 30% that are extreme Marxist, which are... You guys are in that category.
Extreme leftists. 30% are extreme leftists. Okay.
30% are extreme leftists, and then there's the moderate Democrats who just hate Republicans just because it's fashionable to hate Republicans.
Well, wouldn't they hate Republicans just because they're Democrats? I mean, couldn't we just give them that?
Oh,
never mind the fashionableness. Okay.
I always thought it was fashionable.
I always thought the opposition party always, anyway, go ahead.
And so, basically, Republicans, now, I don't know, only history is going to tell how this administration is.
Okay.
I am praying to God.
All right.
That these people are who they say they are.
Ah, so you're kind of putting your faith in what the Bush administration says it is.
I am putting my faith in the Creator.
Wait a minute.
I don't put my faith in man.
Oh, okay. Can't argue with you there. The ineffable vagueness of it is cool with me.
Okay.
Okay.
And so all I can do is just, hope for the best. Now, as far as if it comes down to which evil is the greater evil, I would definitely say the left.
The left is the greater evil than the right.
I don't see the left as any different than those people who put Stalin in power or Hitler in power. They're just you guys are basically very just fools.
Well,
I mean, you're suckers.
Okay, given that I guess I'm in that category of suckers, here's where I'm confused. You haven't defined the left-wing agenda for me in such a manner that I can understand, other than saying, in essence, I guess, that there's a totalitarian aspect to the cooperation of the private and the public sector, which, of course, you know, has actually is kind of sort of in the Constitution and sort of has always existed.
No,
it says in the preamble to provide for the common good. I mean, you know,
that's another thing I heard some idiot call in and say, oh, provide for the welfare. Well, just because they call the program welfare doesn't mean that was the founder's intent.
Okay, listen, I think you need to kind of clearly summarize your position, and then I'm going to call on the next person, okay? So why don't you do that?
I will summarize my position by saying the federal government needs to be eliminated. Everything in the federal government, FBI, CIA, everything except for the National Military, Army, Navy, and then everything else should be on a local level.
Okay.
That's the libertarian position.
I appreciate your call, man.
Bye.
Take care. All right, 231-8187. We're having a kind of abstract so far discussion about the nature of fascism and the nature of this government. I also have a long list of the stories that were both overhyped and underplayed. This far this year, a lot of stuff has been ignored. I find this very disturbing. There's also the what I consider to be the clear tendency of this government, more than a tendency, the direction of this current government, this administration, toward fascism. We just had a caller who says, hey, listen, anything in the way of government that goes beyond the role of the military is totalitarian, fascist. And he links the left and the right as part of that. So I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Anna, you're on the air.
Howdy. I want to know if I got support. I just put a sign on the front of my apartment door, impeach him now. The woman above me has had in her window since the last election, election sign for Bush and Cheney.
Okay.
Another thing, I think you're wasting valuable time on the schmuckies. Thanks.
All right, thanks for the call on the schmucky. Okay, I don't know if she means the topic is schmucky or the previous caller was schmucky. Schmuck is an interesting word, by the way. It's if it's Yiddish, it's a euphemism for the male reproductive organ. If it's German, it just means jewelry accoutrements, or, you know, like cufflinks and watches and stuff like that. Isn't that interesting? Kind of an interesting thing. But anyway, I do want to hear from you. 231-8187. Let's go out to Michael. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. I just have a nitpick.
A nitpick. All right, pick my nit.
Clinton wasn't essentially impeached. He was impeached.
Yeah, I'm sorry I said that. You're right.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's about it. I just, I have a pet peeve about this because I had a very long and protracted argument with a friend of mine who's very savvy politically.
Uh-huh.
Who insisted that Clinton was not impeached just simply because he wasn't convicted.
Impeachment is the charges. Conviction is another thing.
Yeah, the impeachment is the indictment,
right,
in effect. But I agree with the previous caller about the previous caller.
Okay.
I think even the first caller was a little bit confused about fascism.
I agree with you, but I want to emphasize something to you and to our listeners. I think it's important now for the community of concerned people, and I'm talking about progressives here in large part, to reach out and have dialogue with true conservatives and true libertarians about the state of the nation at this time. Because I think there is a common ground in concern for the excessive power of this executive government, of this administration. I think there are good Republicans and good libertarians who are, as if they are reachable at all, and I think they are, who are or could be as concerned as people on the left about the excesses of this government, because the principles involved are there are common grounds. Now, that as I said earlier, that's not going to turn the nation into a social democracy or something. All it's going to do is stop this heinous slide into totalitarianism. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, well, that's where I'm coming from, too.
Okay,
I think you're right. I've talked to people. I've talked to Republicans whom I respect that are also concerned.
I'm glad to hear that, and I suspect there's lots of them out there. I don't know if they listened to KABU, but I know there's lots of them out there. And I'm going to try to cultivate that crowd because I think they're very important. I think they may be key to stopping this very bad thing.
Well, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, man. Thanks for the call. 231-8187. You're listening to Talk Radio with me, Joe Uris. Abe Proctor is not here today. Want to hear from you. The topic is, as it will be a lot with me, because I'm very, very frightened about what's happening in this country, the rising tide of American fascism led by the Bush administration. And, you know, if you need a definition of fascism and what I'm talking about, I'm glad to give it, but maybe all of you know. So let's hear from you. Nicole, you're on the air.
Hi, hello. I've always kind of wondered about how the Libertarian Party was actually more, how it's different from the Republican Party, because from my understanding of the Libertarian Party, they're more about supposedly protecting people's rights, or that's what they say in their literature. But the thing is that I've kind of noticed that with the Libertarians, that the biggest conglomerate of people that call themselves libertarians tend to be businessmen, and if we kind of look at this a little bit deeper, basically when they talk about people, they're talking about how corporations can represent themselves as a person, and unfortunately it seems that they don't really, they're another a party that looks at the government as the enemy, which is unfortunate because, you know, the government basically is supposed to be for the people, by the people. So for me, I think the Libertarian Party doesn't really walk their talk. I think that it's just a party for business people to try and change the laws so they can continue to shit on the earth and do whatever they want business-wise.
I had to dump you because we got a rule that we can't use certain sets of words on the air. The government is very serious about this, particularly at this time of day. My apologies, but you had said the S word. So we had to, we had to let you go. But I do want to comment on and respond to what you said, because I think it's important. A little bit of history here about the Libertarian Party. I say a little bit because that's what it's going to be. I, when I was doing some journalism for Willamette Week, was sent to the Libertarian Party's National Convention, which took place here in Portland, Oregon. And incidentally, part of that, their keynote speaker was, get ready for it, Larry Flynt, the working class, at one time, publisher of Hustler magazine, which is a skin mag, and at that time was the most outrageous of those mainline, what do you call them, successful dirty mags. At any rate, the Libertarian Party at that time had really two wings. There was an anarcho-syndicalist wing, which was, I guess, to the left, and there was a conservative wing, which, of course, was to the right. The Libertarian Party, since that time, has kind of gone to the right. It is, when it is really seriously thinking about the issues, I think, basically more concerned with the power of government and does not seem to comprehend, and this is true not just of libertarians, but a lot of conservatives as well, does not seem to comprehend the enormous power of the consumer-based capitalist system. And because they don't comprehend that, they see any kind of attempt to regulate business or to have a more powerful counterbalance to the enormous power of corporate capital, they don't seem to see that that's a real danger, that you really need a powerful state if you're going to have powerful capital. Now, I'm increasingly disturbed by the role that government is not playing in our society, and I find libertarianism kind of anachronistic in this context. A lot of people on the right, and I'm speaking to you on the right as well as those of us who are not, seem to not understand the enormous danger to the constitutional democracy that this current administration represents. And I really believe that it's not something you can ignore, and I really believe you need to pay attention to it. Because historically, once such groups get in power, they favor certain groups over others, and hey, most of you ain't going to be part of that. You know what I mean? So democracy, Republican democracy, that's a small r, small d, requires a balance of powers. And it requires a real conscious and participative and aware, and when I say conscious, I mean knowledgeable, voting population. That's something that the United States rarely has had and certainly doesn't seem to have right now. Most voters seem to operate out of fear or anger. And 9/11, of course, was the ideal opportunity to allow fascism to flourish. Now, I don't think that the fascist tendency is particularly Republican. I think it transcends the two basically conservative parties that rule this country. But I think that these guys who have seized control of the Republican Party at this time represent, as we used to say, the greater contradiction. I do want to hear from you, all of you. 231-8187 is the number to call. And let's go out to Jeff. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
First, I want to just really thank you for your wisdom in valuing, carefully listening to people that we, some of us, I guess we have, that might include you and me, don't necessarily agree with.
Because, well, thank you.
One, you already pointed out, it is really important that we stay in dialogue, because what I think part of has allowed this regime to come to power has been to keep us all in opposition, and it's kind of gone on since our great president Reagan, and so it's really important that we listen, because what I heard him say, where there was a lot of true things that he said, but a lot of delusion too mixed in with it, and so it's important.
Can you specifically talk about the delusion versus the truth as you see it?
Well, there's value in some of what he said, like, you know, let me go back a ways and say that what I have seen, is that since maybe a time that around the time that Reagan came into presidency was this, kind of attack that all our problems are because of welfare mamas. Or that's one of our major problems.
Well, essentially, let me just add something. One of the ironies of these new Republicans is that while they take more and more power into the government, they attack the notion of centralized government. So this kind of eerie paradox is embraced by them, and nobody seems to catch on.
Oh, well, let me take that a step further and say, I've kind of gotten to the point that anything that they are saying is the exact opposite of what they're doing.
Now, that's interesting. I wonder if that's absolutely true.
Well, that's, I don't know if it's absolutely true, but I think in general, most of it is. Because anything they're saying is just the exact opposite of what they're truly
so
doing.
So if they say we want to preserve democracy, what they mean is we want to destroy democracy, something like that.
Yeah, and all of the rest. So anyways, what I really want to point about the caller is he's saying, yes, they wanted us to, our founding fathers, I love that's the fallback position. Our founding fathers wanted this, so we're supposed to try to think that we can imagine what was in their minds. I mean, we can only take for what they wrote. And then, they're kind of, it's like we're going to reiterate what the true intent was. And so we say, our founding fathers, wanted us not to be connected or to have state run this, that, or, you know, whatever, and it's like the, you know, not state run corporations, but at the same time completely disregarding his own comment about his faith that God's going to handle it all. And that's going right back to allowing the church and state part of what quote our founding fathers wanted to be very cautious about.
No, I think you're making a very good point, and I wanted to add one historical note here. At the founding, whatever the founding fathers, of course there were no founding mothers. women had no rights,
awesome
really.
Point. Good point.
Well, it is an important point. In fact, one of the points I wanted to make is that the Constitution has historically, in general, been expanded to include more people. The Constitution, through amendment and through custom, has now given equal rights to, theoretically at least, to persons of color, including Native Americans, to women, and so on. And so the Constitution is, in essence, a progressive document to a large extent. So that when people go with this kind of founding father intent thing, even if they're quoting from the founding fathers, they're ignoring what has happened historically to the United States that has turned it into this enormous, powerful, I don't know what you would call it, machine. The fact of the matter is that very early on, the federal government engaged, in fact, the creation of the Constitution itself had to do with the encouragement of commerce to a large extent between the then 13 new states. And of course, the creation of canals, and later railroads and so on, are all part of the process that was sponsored by the government that enriched many, many men. So to misunderstand or to ignore the fact that the part of the role of the federal government is to make some people rich and other people not rich is to ignore the realities of our system. That doesn't negate the value of much of the Constitution, the checks and balances, the amendment system and the creation of the Bill of Rights. All those are crucially important and unique. Another point I wanted to make, which is very important, is the United States was the first modern republic of any consequence. What that means is our model may not be the best because it was the first. It is very good, but maybe, and this is very important, it never came to grips with the problem of political parties and interest groups, and never developed a parliamentary system, which later democracies figured out, to put checks and balances within the system that would ensure that any political party, however minority, would have some voice in government. And this has locked us into this right-wing center government.
That's so valuable, because exactly, ignoring true history and how much our government involvement has been very much aligned, you know, all these little... we love movies about how this agency you know, was involved in some scandalous thing, but we don't want to look at the truth. That stuff goes on. There's more and more information comes out all the time of how we aligned ourselves with making these small groups of people very rich and doing these dirty deals all over the world and, you know, wars and killings and just ad infinitum, really.
Well,
and,
I think the importance of check and balance, by the way, is
yeah,
crucial.
Yeah, no, and also what you said, that we like to pride ourselves, and that's where the danger of going for the fallback to the founding fathers thing is that was the ultimate end-all, be-all concept of democracy, and that it can't be improved on, or that we got to get back there somehow. And it's like we could, instead of looking at what's really happened and where it's going, and how we can do what's best for all concerned, is what I hear you saying. What's best for all concerned?
Well,
and really going to the greatest extent we can to really hear and have lengthy dialogue with every point of view so we get all the information that we can to make the best choices.
Well, I really appreciate your call. I guess we should go on with some other callers.
Thank you very much
for the call. 231-8187. By the way, a lot of people have criticized me on the air saying, hey, you say we're going to go on to other callers and then you yammer on. Well, I'm sorry, but I do. But I won't now. I'll go out to the next caller. Who is it? Al, it's Al all the time. How are you?
It is not. Come on.
No, that's just from a song, remember?
Oh, I see. All right.
I remember the Once I Build a Railroad, Made It Run Against Time.
Okay.
I was
okay.
Al. It was Al all the time. I was the guy with the drum.
My gosh, Joe. You're
sorry.
You're
anyway,
getting
go ahead.
In your professorial pitch again.
Oh, I just prattle on. Go on.
Yeah, okay. How well acquainted are you with personality development stages in a child?
Sort of.
All right, you understand then. Between 3 and 5, the child develops a capacity for empathy with others and...
Not me, boy.
Okay, right, all right.
Anyway.
Sure. All right.
They should. Ideally, a child should develop that capacity.
There's a point to this. This is just not arcana. The point being that it is at that point that the person becomes... And for the rest of their lives, in the turmoil of trying to sort out the advantages of or the payoffs and consequences of one either indulging one's personal impulses toward gratification and the benefits of the cooperative social interaction.
Right.
You're following me?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, if you. And the point being is that if you look at the contrived issue between communism, socialism, and capitalism, really are kind of an externalization of this perpetual conflict that goes on within all of us.
Well, that's an interesting idea. So you're saying that the urge toward capitalism and, on the other hand, the urge toward some kind of a generous and sharing system is a reflection of this 3 to 5 year old stage in child development?
Well, that's been elaborated. I mean, there was a lot of writing about it in the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
And very often, though, you have people that fall off the spectrum, you know, one side of the bell curve, that they become pathologically feel like any suppression, any restraint of the self-urge to self-gratification and disregard of the commonwealth, or the opposite way.
What would the opposite way look like? You'd be so generous you'd give everything away or something?
Well, yeah, I mean, how many of us can be Mother Teresa's or whatever?
Well, don't bring her up, because I'm not a Mother Teresa hater, by the way.
That may not be a good example, but I'm bringing this up because the person, your first caller this morning, seemed to be almost pathologically, you know, he's trying to clip every thought in such a way that it always comes back that anytime I have to make consideration to a commonwealth, and by the way, this has played very heavily since especially since world in this country, that if you will, I view the McCarthy era not as an anti-communist as much as an anti-intellectual phenomenon, and that anyone who, and since the New Deal, that constituted a threat to people who were impulsively, pathologically, really unable to think in terms of anything but their own self-gratification and edification, in complete disregard of the commonwealth. And so we had this phony issue of socialism versus capitalism, when our system really is not supposed to be quote unquote in the stereotypically way a socialistic capitalism. It's supposed to be a balance, if anyone has ever read the history of the country.
My point is
that you really are wasting your time when these people call in who are incapable of having a political discourse, because they're pathologically locked in one side of that conflict within themselves.
So you have a psychosocial analysis of the politics of people on the right, sort of.
Well, these things always are a projection or a manifestation.
Yeah, but let me.
I won't simplify it, and I'll get off the line, and you can talk it with someone else. But my point is simply that our recent history really, by branding anyone who expressed concern about commonwealth and the common good, were immediately labeled "quote unquote" socialist, capital, communist,
right?
Which served very effectively to suppress any that expression for wanting to avoid the label. But it was very serving of the whole opposite side, or the opposite end of that spectrum, which was any time I have to forfeit any of my own immediate gratification for the benefit of the commonwealth, then I'm being suppressed by communism. So anyway, I'll get off the line. So
thank you very much for the call.
Bye.
I really appreciate it. I personally am not too interested, not that I think they're invalid, but I'm not too interested in psychological explanations for the belief systems that people hold, though that's sometimes very useful, and I don't deny its usefulness. I want to assume that anyone who presents a philosophical position, a political position which has a philosophical base, are authentic in their belief, whatever its origins in their own experience, in their own developmental experience. I don't deny that developmental experience, but I want to give individuals, this kind of existential statement, legitimacy in what they say and do, and hold them responsible for it accordingly. By the way, just so I get it out of the way, there is an opportunity to hear Native American spoken word poetry. I don't know what non-spoken word poetry would be, but there's an opportunity to hear these Native American poets at Laughing Horse Books. Luke Warmwater and Trevino L. Brings Plenty. You probably know both those names because both of them have been around Portland for a while and also been on the national scene. We'll be performing one night only, and there'll be a screening of the short film Iktomi and the Food Stamp Incident at Laughing Horse Books this Friday at 7 p.m. It's free. Laughing Horse, as you know, is at 36th and Division Streets here in Portland. I would recommend that very highly. I've heard both men read, and they're really good poets. So, I just wanted to mention that. I also want to remind you, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. I'm Joe Uris. My partner, Abe Proctor, isn't here today. We're talking about fascism. I can't help it. We're also talking about what is to be done. And I also am arguing that I want to hear as much as I can from conservatives and libertarians. I want dialogue with those on the right, conservatives and so on, because I think that reaching out and having dialogue is necessary to save this republic. And I also want to hear from any of you. 231-8187. Herb, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Joe.
How are you doing?
Okay, and so I've heard that guy call in before, and it always irks me that he calls himself and describes as a libertarian and then describes himself as a right-winger. I find that contradictory. I'm a long-time libertarian. I'm one of the founders of the party.
Oh, really? So you know about the time when the Libertarian Party embraced both the left and the right?
Yeah, that was the whole point of it. I don't know how long you want to listen to that, but, you mentioned about the wings of the party. Little backgroundy thing. All parties have wings, right? I mean,
sure.
The right wing Democrats.
Without wings, they cannot fly.
Yeah. And so there's a range of opinions of various sorts in the party. And I don't know if you said that, but it's been my observation that there is a drift towards the right. It's kind of interesting, and that has happened in the last 20 years. One of the things is, I think that the Libertarian Party was very small. We had some go back and hunt down the election successes. They're kind of impressive at their time, but it's very small. So there has been a movement of conservatives into the party because they feel frustrated with the Republican Party for reasons that you're, as the topic of your show, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's been a rightward drift of opinion. They're also very technical about politics, so that in the literature of the party and lawn signs or whatever, there's a de-emphasis of ideology, because people don't vote for ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's very practical reasons for these, but it's a trend that I don't, I'm sort of regretful to see. And, and then also within the party, I could give you some ammunition for later. You said you did went to one of the conventions and so forth,
mm-hmm.
about the Libertarian Party. The founders of it came generally from the conservative direction. The ones we got mailings in the winter of 71, 72, and then, formed the state parties and then had a national convention and started the National Party.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically from the conservative direction. And I think that's another practical fact for libertarians running for office, is that they are able to attract votes from, say, Republicans and from conservatives better than they're able to attract votes from Democrats and lefties.
No, I think that's true. I think that's a good observation. I assume the Libertarian Party at this point in history is on the right. And I assume that its politics are anti-government, almost knee-jerk anti-government at this point in history. But I also think a lot of American thought and a lot of American concern has to do with a great fear of government. The failing that I find, there are many failings, but the failing I find most significant about many libertarians is that they don't understand the power of capital. They are very aware of the power of government.
Well, See, one of the things, like I was saying about the ideology thing, and like, for example, at the parties, I'm busy and lazy and have not gotten together to have some sort of, sideshow at the party. I'd like to get, do something called, nitpicking and hair splitting or something like that, and get down to these bases. For example, my vision of a libertarian society, when we come to power sort of thing, would be, for example, repeal of all the corporation laws. What are now corporations could be operated as partnership shares, and they could be.
No, I agree. There's something we have in common. I absolutely believe that the courts made a fatal mistake in the late 19th century in creating the fictitive personness of corporations. I believe corporations do not have, First Amendment rights.
Oh, yeah.
I believe corporations are way too large and way too powerful, and I think that they should be limited partnerships. And I really believe that that decision, which is kind of a post-Civil War capitalism gone crazy decision, has cost us a great deal in our society.
Well, I once ran down that line of court cases and so forth that had to do with that. And I think that sort of has been retracted. The personhood of corporations ain't what it used to be, after the infamous Union Pacific decision and so forth. They sort of backed off of that pretty much. And yet the corporations obviously are powerful.
Well, you can never forget, and this is important no matter where you are on the political spectrum, you can never forget that in American politics, money talks, and anything else walks.
Well,
and the only way to counter that is through active citizen participation in the process, and the small contribution, the continued involvement, almost exhaustingly necessary for democracy to prevail under these circumstances. So that means that the very structure of the dialogue, the very context, is now dominated by a certain kind of capitalism.
And, another thing that, for instance, I hear on KABU, for example, non-corporate radio, it's not true. KABU is a corporation.
Well,
that's the other half, that's the other shoe, is the non-profits.
Yeah.
Why should I pay taxes on my place and the Church of the Bloody Gore across the street doesn't have to pay any taxes?
The Church of the Bloody Gore, is that kind of Al in a bad mood or
could
what?
Could be, yeah.
Okay, listen, I want to give others opportunity. You want to kind of sum up?
The libertarian, the central proposition is the rights of the individual for libertarians. And, that That's as small a summary as I could make.
That's very good, and I appreciate the call.
You sure?
All right. 231-8187. Talking about, I guess the theme really is the necessity, the absolute necessity of progressives, sincere progressive, to reach out beyond the stereotypes of left and right and to attempt to find a common ground against the impending, what I believe to be very real, fascism of the Cheney-Bush regime. Put Cheney first because he's really the daddy who runs the show. Bush is kind of the doofus in the front of the show. All right, pay no attention to the man behind the thing. All right, let's go out to Joe. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
How are you doing?
Two points. Please let me get them both out before you cut me off. Number one, on libertarianism, it seems like it's dependent on the idea of autonomous individuality.
Yes. Autonomous individuality.
Well, I have a problem with that, because every breath we take and every bite of food we eat is completely dependent on all that green stuff out there that on the surface of this planet, and we are part of that inescapably. If we do manage to escape that, we are dead. Every word we ever speak, and a whole lot of our sanity and our ability to function in anything but our survival as infants. And after that point, our ability to function anyway but using our bare hands to try and drag food into our mouths is dependent on the social structure that has raised us and nurtured us and taught us.
No, I agree with you. Joe, let me summarize just briefly.
Yeah.
I agree with you. If I understand you correctly, you're pointing out the interconnectedness and the absolute necessity for at least cooperation to provide for the common good.
Yeah, and the idea that it's a zero-sum game and this individual advances himself only at the expense of somebody else involves ripping that fabric apart. To an extent, it damages us all, whether they want to see it or not.
I agree with you. Absolutely agree with you.
Now, for your point that we have to save a marvelous republic from Zords and Company.
Mm-hmm.
A marvelous republic was set up to protect the wealth and power of a few individuals from the rest of us by giving us the fiction that we had a part of it that we really never had.
So you're saying it's a fiction fundamentally?
Yeah. As the horizon of what was available to be exploited expanded,
mm-hmm. They
expanded the social of privilege to encompass more and more of the people living in this country and the contours of the third world outside this country.
Mm-hmm.
We have come to an inevitable place of resource design that is going to contract their horizon. And inevitably, whoever is in power, they are going to be less liberal and less generous, and we are going to have to fight them harder for anything that we manage to keep.
You know, I think I agree with your analysis. I really do. I think you put your finger on a fundamental contradiction, and I'm just going to repeat it for folks, and that is that as resources dwindle, the powerful will hold on to and expand their power, and the struggle will become more and more intense, and we all of us who are not the powerful will have to fight ever harder. Do I summarize you right?
Yeah. Now, the election of another somebody very little better than Clinton would only delay the presence of another even worse than George Bush until that struggle is even more desperate than it already is.
That's interesting. I think you and I sort of disagree there because I do think that we can stop. I don't think the slide to fascism in the way you characterize it is absolutely inevitable, but you may be right. You may be right.
And that I am going to hold out for using George Bush to display the dysfunction of the whole system to more and more people to say that we need a much better alternative than what George Bush has succeeded in hijacking.
So you're saying that we really need the radical change, maybe
yeah.
to a parliamentary system, maybe to limitation on power. I actually agree with you, Joe. Of course, I would always agree with you because your name and mine are the same. Anyway, listen, that was I think you've put things very, very well. And we have a small disagreement, maybe not so small, but a disagreement on this. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, that's it.
I appreciate the call, man. Keep calling. All right. Hey, I got to tell you a bunch of stuff. This is, if you're just listening, KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. It's about 8:30. And my name is Joe Uris, and this is Talk Radio. My partner, Abe Proctor, is not with us today. The number to call is 231-8187. We do want to hear from you. The theme, the topic today, is what is to be done about the rising, and I'm willing to argue even this point, the fascism of the current regime in the United States. That is the Cheney-Bush regime. Not the Bush-Cheney regime, because it's Cheney that runs it and Bush the front man. But I got to tell you these great things that are coming up. It's 7:30. It's the Abe. Oh, no, that's me. At 9 on Between the Covers, Lisa Loving speaks with writer Jacqueline Winspear about her mystery novel, Pardonable Lies, featuring Maisie Dobbs, a psychologist and investigator. At 9:30, it's Black Book Talk with Patricia Welsh, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford. At 10:30 on Stage and Studio, hear a special documentary with six widows recalling the crash of Pan Am Flight 103 over Scotland. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, my absolute favorite radio show, former NSA intelligence agent Russell Tice condemns reports that the agency has been engaging in eavesdropping on U.S. citizens without court warrants. And John Perkins, the author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman, great book, discusses the recent WTO meetings, the New York City transit strikes, and the U.S. economic interventions in Latin America. On those last three, I just wanted to make some comments really quickly. The New York City transit strike is an example of extreme Republican takeover or attempt to destroy unions. No question about it. The New York City transit system had a surplus of more than $1 billion when it tried to slash the benefits for its present and future workers. U.S. economic interventions in Latin America, whoo boy, kind of hard to do right now because guess what? Latin America is developing its own alternative economy. WTO meetings also going badly for the United States. Anyway, all that and more on KBOO, your listener-supported radio, 90.7 on the FM, back now with Talk With Me. And let's go out, 231-8187, to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, the fight against fascism is a battle that takes place in the business world. It's not so much a social issue as the... Well, I would call it the KBOO mindset falls into this trap of seeing the Constitution as a racist document where it's actually reflects the prejudices of a manorialistic type economy. You know, what I'm saying is that the major property owners got to have a vote for sure and were the people who ran for office and things like that. And there really isn't a lot of mention of race in the Constitution. They mention slaves, and slaves is an economic issue, condition, albeit we do know that most slaves were African, but they weren't enslaved because they were black. They were enslaved because they were non-Christian. And the whole idea was to... have a society that was sort of like a manor house economy from Europe where you had a lord, you would have a few mid-management people, and then you would have a lot of workers, most of whom in the time of the Constitution, the largest class that was discriminated against would be the white, non-property-owning males.
Wait. Let's parse this a little bit. First of all, the fact that that the only slave population that existed and the fact that there were state laws about who these people were cannot be ignored. The differentness, the assumed and made much greater than reality, differentness of African peoples it plays an important part in the maintenance of slavery. In fact, it becomes crucial all the way up through and even beyond the Civil War. That's number one. Number two, the impact of the constitutional system was in large part not just to control that slave population, but also to put certain limits on non-property holders. But I think that I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, let me be real quick. I wanted to make a comment on two points. One was that point that I made about the Constitution. The other one was this issue of welfare. What I want to point out is that welfare is actually a very old concept in terms of taking care of widows and orphans. That goes way back to the first crowned king in Europe in about 500 AD after the fall of the Roman Empire. The first Western ruler who took an oath, the church crowned him under some rules, and one of the rules was that he would provide welfare for the widows and orphans. The state would do it, not the church. The state would do it. I suppose probably because it was like a warrior society, and that in a warrior society, a lot of males would die and leave widows and orphans, and somebody had to care for them, and it was in his oath of office that the king would do it as the earthly power opposed to the church being the spiritual power. And that's my big beef with the right wing, and I just pointed out my beef with the left wing, and the main thing that we have to remember is the way to fight fascism is we got to get the power into the hands of the little people. Power is economic power. This country's history is full of examples where communalistic acts work. In other words, the Homestead Act, putting economic power into the hands of every man. Freed slaves were able to own property and become part of a functioning free society. So let's not fall into that leftist trap of just thinking that everybody and the whole system was out after people of color. Actually, the color thing, it's always been an economic thing and a property-owning thing, and we need to outlaw the corporation and get the money out of politics. We need to outlaw the corporation by making the workers of a particular factory or product or service or idea the owners and not the stockholders and investors.
Okay, well, thanks.
You bet.
Thanks for the comments. I just want one comment on that. The role of ideology in justifying or rationalizing the destruction of different cultures or the control of different cultures, the distinction made between slaves and free men and women really rested in most states, in all states, and in the Constitution on the assumption that slaves would be African in origin. The taking over of a third of Mexico by the United States in the 1840s was also based on the assumption that Mexicans were culturally, genetically inferior. So the racism there cannot be ignored. The destruction of Native American peoples have similar roots. So while I agree that there's an economic basis for slavery, I do not want to dismiss the racist rationalizations, the racist ideology that is very much a part of the founding notions of the United States and very much a part of our history, unfortunately. Anyway, I want to hear from all of you. We're talking about fascism, what is to be done, and we're also talking about the very important question of how we can and should we and how do we reach out to our brothers and sisters on the right who maybe are beginning to wake up to the very real dangers of this Bush administration as what I believe to be a truly fascist regime? Want to hear from you. 231-8187. Richard, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
I don't know if somebody may have already talked about this. I haven't heard the whole discussion, but it seems to me that there's a possibility for doing the kind of reaching out across the ideological divides that we all want, or we don't all want, many of us want, in one particular area right now, and that is where secrecy, privacy, and surveillance come together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me, and as I was thinking about it, in a more literary mood, you might call it an irony, I suppose, in a more political analysis, a contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
But one very intriguing parallel is that corporations and the Bush maladministration, at precisely the same time as they insist on their prerogative to strip away as much privacy as possible and to have as much right to surveil, you know, to spy on, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Employees, people have to sign these pledges now that, you know, they won't betray the secrets of the company and all sorts of that sort of thing. At precisely the same time as the individual or the disempowered is told you have no right to privacy, the most extreme claims and prerogatives of privacy are claimed, or secrecy are claimed, on the part both of government as represented by Bush
mm-hmm.
and Cheney et al., and by the corporations.
I think you're right. I think you're right. I think that's a very good point.
And I think that the reason I push it so hard is that it seems to me that maybe that by focusing on that, I mean, obviously the warrantless wiretaps and the rest of it, make this a time when people are, you know, it's very easy to be aware across a broader divide that we have a problem. At the same time, there's an article in today's Oregonian about some woman who didn't get a job because she was mistakenly tagged as she applied for the job as a person who had been a convicted felon, and it was a mistake, and she basically got shafted.
Yeah.
And I didn't even see, because I was running out the door, whether or not how she found out that it had happened. My guess is that most of the time when that kind of thing happens, the person who got screwed never even knows it.
No, right? I think you're right. They never see the documents. And I wanted to make one point with you here, and I really appreciate your point. The secrecy, the governmental privacy, and the destruction of personal privacy, and the surveillance that's going on right now, unfortunately, is perceived, at least, as only affecting those who are the quote-unquote left, or the demonized, or the bad guys. What's necessary is for people who are otherwise think of themselves as totally mainstream, including the conservatives in the country, to realize the fascistic implications of that.
Yeah.
That in fact, hey, when that happens and the government gets in the hands of these kinds of people and has total control, the next step is to constantly narrow the definition of patriotism and so on, and to begin the spying on everybody. The corporate part of the spying, that is, having cookies and so on that tell them everything about your commercial life, everything about your computer life, everything about your mail life and so on.
Databases that when you go to apply for a job, they find out that, you know, somebody had some sort of, maybe credit problems 20 years before. I mean,
right.
The whole idea that the myth in America that the American is freer than anyone in the world to reinvent themselves and get a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
To
yeah,
whatever
no.
extent it was true, it is becoming less true every day with these, you know, the technologies of surveillance. And, you know, hopefully, if they ever can pry out what's been going on with this recent surveillance, the last couple of years that's just come out, maybe there's an opportunity for people to see that it's not just some demonized other.
No, I think you're right, and I think that's part of what I'm struggling with and hoping I can have happen on KABU. That is that we can have this community dialogue in a larger context than just the progressive community. Not that progressives
yeah.
aren't important, and not that we don't need to energize them on issues.
Right, but we're never going to win by ourselves. I mean, it's,
right.
it's necessary to and that's why I think this issue of private, I mean, everybody in this country right now who has a house, just to take one example, this is another nice irony. Trent Lott may leave the Senate because he's getting screwed by the insurance company and he's going to sue them because they don't want to cover his house for water damage, but they would for wind.
Right.
Well, there's a database called CLUE, Comprehensive Loss Underwriting Exchange. Most people have never heard of it. Every time that you make an insurance claim on your house, this may seem obscure, but I think it is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
If you call because some kid hit a baseball through the window and you come back and you've got mold in your living room, if you make a claim, you stand a very real chance that not only may your insurance get jacked up or canceled, but then they won't sell. If you go to sell the house, a buyer can't get insurance. And if he can't get insurance, homeowner's insurance, they can't get a mortgage. That's something that cuts across ideological lines. And when people start to see how these systems are being used to shaft people, regardless of whether they vote conservative and go to church, or they're just, you know, ordinary people,
mm-hmm.
that I think that's, oh my God, a huge heron just landed outside the window of my house. It's not even water.
We can't see the heron. Don't tell us about the heron.
No heron. Okay. Anyway, that's really all I have to say right now, and I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Hey, listen, I thank you very much, and I don't blame you for exclaiming about the heron, but hey. That concept of the comprehensive loss underwriting exchange is very, very important. There are other kinds of databases like that that are not insurance-based. And people should realize that the modern means of information gathering and control and so on are really potentially as dangerous as anything has ever been to individual rights, individual freedom, and privacy. And I really appreciate that call. And I think that is one of the things that ought to concern ordinary Americans. Because it does reach them, it does affect them, it does impact them. The problem is that people are so alienated, so disengaged, and let's say it, because it needs to be said, so uninformed, so, if you will, ignorant, because politics in this society is considered so unimportant and we are, in our own perception, so distant from the rest of the world. We as a people just simply don't know what the hell's going on. Most people in most parts of the world, even in Africa, even in parts of Asia that are very isolated, are far more aware of the big picture than most Americans are. We are people who have been led to ignorance, entertained, if you will, into ignorance. And this is really one of the things that we have to really deal with and have to fight with. Another one I think is very important. Politics is boring for most people, and politics is the thing that's so necessary now to deal with this onrush of what I consider to be fascism. I've called it soft fascism in the past. It's gotten a lot less soft in recent times, and these guys are very, very triumphal in their intents. Only the realities of the situation and the onrushing dilemma of environmental destruction can limit this situation unless we as an American people organize collectively, not to create some idealized form, not even to create social democracy, but to stop this particular fascist takeover. It's very crucial right now to make that alliance because these are scary times. This year, 2006, is the year that will or will not elect a new House of Representatives that will make it possible to oust the Cheney-Bush regime. And they're going to do everything. And I want to emphasize this. I said this at the beginning of the show, but it's really important. They will do everything and anything to extend and maintain their power. They will stop at nothing to keep control. We really must be prepared for that, and we really must be willing to struggle, or else we're going to have to accept the fact that our own lives, not just our political lives, not just our freedoms, but our own lives will be forfeit in the balance because resources do dwindle, and those who hold power will extend it, and they will take from us to keep for themselves. All right, I want to hear from all of you. 231-8187. Doug, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Great program. Look, I agree with you on so much of what you're saying. I believe we actually are farther into a police state, a fascist police state, than we realize. I mean, you look at what this administration has gotten away with. You've never seen this so blatant before. And you have the president. You have an executive authority that's assuming the powers of a king. They've combined the power, so many of the offices. He can declare people enemy combatants and have people arrested. They advocate torture, yet they say they're not for torture. Illegal war in Iraq. Most people are opposed to it, but yet they're submitting false articles to the newspapers to support this war. We're in bad shape, but I would submit that this is not just the Republican Bush administration. This has been going on for some time. Have you been following the DynCorp Halliburton sex slave scandal that's been going on?
No, tell me about that.
Well, there's been some more rumbling in the press, but very little. They're trying to suppress it. You have major corporations receiving government contracts that have actively engaged in sex slave trade with women and children.
Really?
It's absolutely abhorrent that this is going on. And that they continue to receive the contracts. Halliburton, of course, continues to receive contracts. DynCorp, the same thing. They try to brush it off by saying that it was just a few people involved. Absolutely not true. This goes clear to the top, and there were no punishment for these corporations for that. They're still receiving the contracts. So my point would be, if you look back during the Clinton administration, because most of this occurred, the DynCorp scandal during the Clinton administration in Bosnia,
mm-hmm.
where children were being abducted and sold into the sex trade and women were being forced into prostitution, we have an extremely compartmentalized government system. It's not Republican, it's not Democrat. They keep us fighting with each other on issues, homosexuality, abortion, whatever. They've created plenty of issues for us to be divided on. And meanwhile, they continue to control and create more power for this federal government. Which, like you say, we have a fascist dictatorship. That's what they've created. And that's what they've been building ever since World War II. They've worked to establish this. And they've never gotten as far as they've gotten now. And under this Bush administration, you've got neocons who openly are advocating absolute power for the president. And they don't have a problem with it. They just don't have a problem with it. And that's where we are today.
Now, when you say they, can you name they?
As in who are in control, the compartmentalized government. Well, we know there are definitely groups that are out in the open now Limbaugh will still claim the CFR doesn't exist, but the Council on Foreign Relations, you can go look at their website and people should and read their documents. These people actually set policy, and you can look back at things that they had written about major players in the CFR, and you can see that today, so many of those things have been enacted. They're openly pushing this stuff on us now and bragging about it in the press.
Mm. Okay, so for example, the Council on Foreign Relations, I presume you would talk about the top corporate interest groups. You know, this raises an interesting question. Is corporate capital in the United States, the moneyed class, as it were, going to go with this fascism, or will they eventually realize the dangers of it? Because if you look at the history of fascism in Spain, in Italy, or in Germany, the ruling class was so afraid of the left that they went along with the Nazis and so on. And in the end, ironically, after the war and everything, they came out looking pretty damn good. So will that be part of the scenario in the United States? Or will the ruling class in the United States eventually reject this fascism? It's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. I'm afraid the answer is that they'll go along with it.
Well, absolutely, and they are now. Halliburton and DynCorp are only a few examples of that. The major corporations, I mean, look at the prison system. It's corporate-run in so many cases. We have a literal corporate prison system privately contracted out. Corporations are running this planet. That's not fascist communist ideology. Actually, that's a fascist system. That's not communist ideology to say that. That's fact. When you look at the records and look at what these corporations are into and what they're profiting from, there's no question about it, Joe. Corporations mm-hmm. are running the world. Bush is a puppet. He's working for his masters above him. I mean, that's obvious if you look at it. The Bush family is very powerful. That's true. But there's much more powerful families above them. They're doing their job. Corporations are running the planet. The facts are there for those to look at. They want to see the truth.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. And I think what's ironically interesting to me is when I was a kid, and I'm talking a long time ago, I used to read science fiction, which actually described the very situations we're in today.
Right.
Even Robert Heinlein, who I consider to be a fascist himself, essentially described the conditions of a society very much like this one. Ray Bradbury talked about it. A lot of people talked about it. Kurt Vonnegut, of course. But to have it actually come true, so close to their fictitive descriptions, strikes me as almost eerie.
Yeah, right, and absolutely. And Joe, one other thing real quickly, I know you want to move along, but look at the free trade area of the Americas that they're trying to push on us. It all fits perfectly in with the open borders. You know, they've got people squabbling about it's racism that the borders are left, are closed and back and forth. Left-right paradigm, same thing. The reality is if you look at the security and prosperity proposal that Bush and Fox and the Canadian Prime Minister Martin set up, this was long planned and established. They want to have no borders in the Western Hemisphere. They want to create an entire open region. They call it free trade, but it's to destroy free trade. They have their little slave shops set up down in Central America. They got CAFTA passed. They get that enacted. This is what they're trying to do. They're trying to regionalize the world. But meanwhile, the people are distracted with their football games and whatever they want to do, and they're literally setting this stuff up. Open borders is about allowing a large area controlled by global corporations. Mexicans in this country that don't speak English, and public schools catering to the fact that they're allowed to speak Spanish and encouraging that, that's to keep them as a sub-slave class. I mean, that's so easy to understand. If you don't speak English, you don't get the job. That's what they're trying to create.
Well,
they're doing a very good job of it.
That's you kind of switched a little bit there, but that's an interesting point about the use of a group that whose English skills are very limited or non-existent. I had never thought of that quite that way. I'm going to think about that a little bit, and I want to thank you very much for your call.
All right, thank you, Joe. Let's fight the FTAA. We got to stop it.
Okay. I also want to emphasize one thing. Latin America is not, at this point, totally in the control of the United States. Well, it's true of Vicente Fox, and the government of Mexico seems to be part of a shared interest in the United States, controlled by the U.S. By U.S. capital and U.S. politics. But look at what's going on in South America. There is a true alternative economy there, powered, ironically, by petroleum out of Venezuela. I think this is a very interesting challenge to the hegemony, if you will, of the United States. So all is not lost, and things are very fluid, and struggle is still worthwhile, and there's a lot of interesting potential out there. But I want to again emphasize the kind of theme for today is that we all need to recognize the real danger of fascism that's already upon us through the Cheney-Bush administration. Again, Cheney first, because he's the daddy and Bush the baby. And we need to emphasize that. We need to emphasize the importance of that struggle. We need to emphasize that the struggle at this point, the contradiction that needs to be heightened and understood, is not to create socialism or an alternative system or even parliamentary democracy. At this point, we got to get these guys away from the control of power. And to do that, we all need to reach out to those who are intelligent and understand the dangers on the right and on the center. And that's a very important and very difficult task because we're almost all talking a different language with different beliefs, different ideology, different visions, and different information. And this is a really important and challenging problem. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Let's go out to Patrick. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I think it's great what you guys are doing at KBOO, and I think it's great that we have this alternative media. But in my opinion, the left has really been barking up a wrong tree and helping to create a smokescreen. There is one issue where we would have common ground with everyone, but until it's addressed, the chances of there being a change of heart on a national scale, in my opinion, are relatively slim.
What is that issue?
Professor David Ray Griffin has written two books, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions of the New Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
They are breathtaking and astonishing, in which he gives overwhelming evidence, prima facie evidence, that the Bush administration orchestrated and perpetrated the atrocities of September 11th.
Wow, okay.
David Ray Griffin.
David Ray Griffin.
Prima facie evidence. This is the way that we can, you know, draw people together, because no matter what people's political views, if they knew about September 11th, they would rise up. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. By the way, I don't buy the particular argument of David Ray Griffin. I think it's an interesting argument. What I believe about 9/11, by the way, is that the government was incredibly incompetent. Perhaps there is an element of deliberateness there, but I don't think so, in dealing with the danger of Islamic fundamentalism and its attacks on the United States. I do think that a lot of the reason why that happened had to do with the close alliances of the oil rich with the Bush administration. I don't deny that, but I don't see a conspiracy there. But I understand why a lot of people do see that. I think it might be a dangerous distraction, but I don't want to dismiss it out of hand. I just simply don't agree with it. I don't think that's an accurate portrayal of things. But the fact that this administration has got its hands tied because of its fingers being so deeply into Middle East oil is not something to be ignored, regardless of whether or not there was a vast conspiracy to allow 9/11 to happen. And I will admit that it certainly suited the interests of these fascists to have that event take place. Let's go to another caller, 231-8187. Nahalem, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, my name is David.
David.
Yes.
Go ahead, David.
First of all, I wanted to say I'm really enjoying the conversation, and I find it you're a very level-headed, reasonable the person on the air.
Thank you.
Back a couple calls to the fellow with the bird that came down the middle of the call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to comment a way that we help one another is, if we have to label ourselves, I would consider myself a socially progressive conservative Christian.
Ah, interesting, interesting.
And I need to make my comment brief because I am at work and I need to get back.
Me too, because I'm going to have to dump you very quick, so go ahead.
Okay, so I'll make it really quick. We need to be aware of language. The fellow, he ended his statements by saying conservative people who go to church and we normal people, you know, point, 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 and we normal people. Well, first of all, not everybody who's conservative goes to church, and not everybody who goes to church is conservative.
Good point.
And also, we are normal people. So.
Absolutely. No, I think dissing people of religious faith is very dangerous, and we all need to be aware of that. Hey, listen, I've run out of time. I have to let you go. Great programming coming up. I hope you've enjoyed the show. This is Joe Uris wishing you a very good day, a very happy new year. You know, keep on keeping on. The struggle's worth it, and KBOO's worth listening to. Listener-supported radio right here at 90.7 on your FM dial.
Iguarias, numa festa de esplendor.